Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
When I was a kid, I was a huge boxing fan. I kind of grew up in an era when the sport of boxing was like a really big deal. For a long time, it seems like boxing kind of wasn't a big deal. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but I sort of feel like boxing's more popular now than it was a few years ago. Ultimately, probably doesn't really matter, but that's the sense that I get. However, the one thing that you would probably agree with me on if you followed boxing at any point in time in your life, which is sometimes the big fights are guys who weigh 150 pounds, and those can be good, they can be entertaining. But when it's heavyweights, there's just something about that. I grew up in the Mike Tyson era, and you know Tyson was obliterating people for a long time. But still, when it's big-time heavyweight fight, it just gets your attention. Some of you are older than me. You remember the Ken Nortons, the George Foremans, the Muhammad Ali's, the Joe Frazier's, and you could say that even more so than people of my era could. Contemporary speaking, you know, there was the moment not too long ago when Tyson Fury fought Deontay Wilder, and I think the people who were involved with that, the people who wanted to watch that, would just say, when it's really big guys going mano-a-mano, I don't care who you are, you're just going to sort of stop and watch because there is just something about big guys engaging in combat that you can't turn your eyes from. The reason why I'm saying all this may be obvious to many of you if you've been around the internet around Georgia over the last 24 hours. There is a video, I guess it's fair to call this a bootleg video, although it was shared initially on social media, at least that's the sense that I get it, is it generates from Jalen Carter's Instagram feed, but it's been passed around all over the place. Message boards have had it. I saw this first on Twitter because Terrence Edwards, who joined us yesterday, by the way, on the program, retweeted a Georgia fan who kind of had this. A heavyweight battle, if there ever was, between Jalen Carter, the freshman defensive lineman, and Trey Hill, the very good Georgia center. Radio podcast, obviously you can't see this, but many of you have already seen this. I'll put a link. I think Mike Griffith has even written a story about this at DogNation.com. I'll put a link to all that when we post the podcast later on. But for our video, let me show you the tweet that has the video here. And the thing that kind of jumps off the page at you here is, first of all, we know what Trey Hill is. Trey Hill's a very good player. We already kind of know that. We're learning more about Jalen Carter. Many of us follow him on the recruiting trail. We knew this to begin with. As it was shared on Twitter, this clearly looks to be a Jalen Carter win on this rep. Carter is gigantic. He is strong as a bull, apparently, because that is certainly the image that you get from watching him on this video. And all of a sudden, here's a recruit that Georgia fans are now a signee and an incoming freshman player that Georgia fans were already really excited about. And when you see him not just holding his own against what might be an all-SEC center, but to my eyes, actually winning that rep and getting a chance to, you know, maybe put himself in a category for early playing time and everything like that, all of a sudden you get even more excited about what a guy like Jalen Carter might bring to the table for Georgia this year. When Dan Lanning, the Georgia defensive coordinator, met with reporters a week ago on Friday, you know, the name of Jalen Carter came up because, listen, there was already buzz about this guy before a bootleg video sneaks its way onto the internet, enough so that Lanning, it was not surprising that he was asked about Carter last week. Here's what Georgia's defensive coordinator had to say about him, though.
Jalen Carter has, you know, plenty to learn, but he's very strong. He's an explosive athlete. We definitely think he can make an impact for us. And it's good to see his technique continuing to get better day in and day out. He definitely makes the guys across the ball better.
Yeah, so that's all to be expected here. And, you know, let me say two more things about all of this. And I'm gonna veer just briefly into the realm of conspiracy theories. And the people who know me privately, I don't do a lot of this on the air, but I like sort of small scale conspiracy theories, not big wide scale things. I'm not into that kind of thing, but sort of small scale stuff. Let me lay this on you and you tell me if this makes any sense at all. I think when you see a video like this, that to my knowledge was initially shared by Jalen Carter on his Instagram's now private, but it was initially shared there. I think there's this thought among many fans and probably many in the media too of, oh, wow, this is not supposed to be out. This is practice video. This is not supposed to be shared. You know, Georgia locks down everything. Very, notorious for just keeping, you know, all the state secrets protected when it comes to the program and things like that. However, can we say this for a moment? isn't this Jalen Carter video, at least in terms, it's not, you know, date for date exactly the same, but in terms of the buildup of the upcoming season, you know, tomorrow is the first scrimmage for Georgia in preparation for the season that's about to start. Isn't that the same time a year ago that the George Pickens viral video also came out of the catch that he makes where he, you know, contorts his body? It's one of the coolest catches you ever see. And that video came out and we were kind of left with the same thing of, oh my gosh, how did this video get out? This is not supposed to be here. This is a private scrimmage. Only the you know, the biggest high dollar donors were invited to attend, and they were explicitly told, at least I was told this, they were explicitly told no photographs, no videos. How did this sneak out into the ether? And my sort of small scale conspiracy at the time was, this catch is so spectacular. Is there a chance that Georgia somehow found a way for this to kind of escape out into the world? And you obviously would forgive them if they did, because I think a catch like that does deserve to be seen by everybody. I was told by some boosters that Kirby Smart had told them that he was glad they got a chance to see Pickens doing what he did. Yeah, there you go on video. That's the big moment from George Pickens a year ago. I was told by some big boosters that Kirby told them that they were glad they got a chance to see him make this catch right here, because Kirby had said he'd been doing things like that in practice. He wasn't sure they would see something that dazzling, but he went into that scrimmage knowing it was a possibility. So if it is true that somehow this thing with Pickens a year ago kind of accidentally escaped, and here we are essentially the same spot in the buildup of the start of the season, if not quite the same calendar day because of the fact that everything's delayed this year. And lo and behold, once again, here's this highly regarded freshman and some video of him doing something pretty amazing at practice all of a sudden kind of accidentally escapes its way out into the world. I guess what I'm saying here is, and this doesn't matter, this is just more entertaining for me than anything else, don't be so surprised if maybe behind the scenes, Georgia's not quite so bothered by the fact that a freshman who may be doing well at practice, kind of some video evidence of that kind of escapes out into the world. However, it got to the watchful eyes of you and me and everybody else. Don't be quite so surprised if Georgia's not maybe as bothered by that as you might think. Now, as far as the other guy involved in this, let me just say this briefly. Some people will look at a video that we saw a moment ago of Jalen Carter winning a rep against Trey Hill, Carter the freshman, Trey Hill the established center, and say, well, my gosh, what does that mean for Trey Hill if he's losing a practice rep like that to someone who, you know, just showed up? And, you know, I'm going to publish this over the course of the weekend. Many of you may be aware of this. Some of you may not be. One of the real talks of the New York Giants training camp thus far has been the one-on-one battles between Lorenzo Carter and Andrew Thomas. I'm going to do this as a part of a DN90 that you'll see either on Saturday or Sunday. But there have been multiple observers of Giants training camp thus far who have said, and you can go to Giants.com, the team's main website, and read about this. They've called the Carter-Thomas battles, Thomas stepping in as a starter offensive tackle this year, Lorenzo Carter, obviously an established outside linebacker in that organization. They've said that those one-on-one battles between these two Georgia teammates, former Georgia teammates, have been the best one-on-one battles of the entire camp thus far. And the other day, Carter kind of got by Thomas on a pass rush, and then Thomas stepped back up and kind of won some reps against him. And after Carter had kind of gotten by him and knocked him down even on a rep, there was a reporter that said to Andrew Thomas, hey, what do you do after something like that? And I think that for the football player's mentality, this is so important to remember, because we don't see every practice rep that goes on, but in a very, very talented program like Georgia, everyone's going to win some, everyone's going to lose some, but it's the mentality that you approach all that with that I think really matters. And I thought that Andrew Thomas' statement about what happens after you lose a rep sort of felt relevant to me in a conversation like this. This is what Andrew Thomas told some New York Giants reporters this week.
Did you think it was important to bounce back from that and to show that you could come back from a play like that?
That's just the mentality. It was a great rep by Lorenzo, but it's a next play mentality. So, you know, I come back and do my best to win the next rep.
One time, the owner of the Minnesota Vikings, I forget what his name was, he said a line that always stuck with me. He said, there isn't a horse that can't be rode, and there isn't a cowboy that can't be throwed. And when you are in a heavyweight matchup like I described a moment ago, as Andrew Thomas said, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. You just got to dust yourself back up and get ready for the next one. And it really is as much of a cliche as it gets kind of thrown around about iron sharpening iron, good players making other good players better. That is, I think, what's going on behind the scenes at a Georgia practice each and every day. We get a little bit of a brief taste of that video evidence of just how intense these practices are, just how good folks are on both sides of the ball, even newcomers to the program. The coaches and players who are part of that every day get a much wider experience with all of that. And What makes Georgia good on the field on Saturdays is what it's doing during the week, Monday through Friday. And no matter how this video came to exist and be able to be seen by all of us, I think you'll join me in saying I'm glad we got a chance to see it. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Kroger, and glad to have you with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and we are available as a podcast however you get them, including Apple, Spotify, the Google Play, or the worldfamousdognation.com. The point is, there's just a lot of different ways for you to get in touch with Dog Nation Daily, and we are really glad you are here, and we really appreciate our friends at Kroger for making it all possible. We're heading towards, coming up very soon here, at Labor Day weekend, and that means a big grilling opportunity for many of you. Some of you take advantage of that each and every weekend, but a long weekend coming up is always a fun thing to do there on that front. It's also going to be my wife's birthday, so you better believe Labor Day weekend is going to be a big deal for us around our house. Well, Kroger's got big savings for you for your big cookout, your grilling moment. You can save on charcoal, on chips, on snacks, baby back ribs, and don't forget the dessert as well. Ice cream, all the stuff you need to make the s'mores, just really good stuff at your local Kroger. Make sure you check all of that out. In a couple of minutes here, we're going to go on the road with Jeff Sintel, assisted by AAA. Before we get to that, I want to turn our attention to the offensive side of the ball for a moment. Arkansas coach Sam Pittman made an appearance on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday, and he said a line that kind of got, some folks laughing a little bit, because there's first game coming up for Arkansas. Pittman has made a little bit of noise as of late about not saying who his starting quarterback's going to be. Everyone, for the most part, kind of assumes it's going to be Felipe Franks, but the former Florida transfer. But Pittman won't be on the record about that. He was asked again by Paul Feinbaum on this. Let me show you the tweet that the Feinbaum show sent out about Sam Pittman's response. So this is from Paul Feinbaum on Twitter. Arkansas coach Sam Pittman on when he's going to announce his starting quarterback for the season opener. And here's the quote. As soon as Kirby Smart shares with us who his starting quarterback is going to be, that's when Sam Pittman says he's going to do that. And everybody kind of laughs, because the general assumption is that Smart won't be saying that at all. We'll never find out who the official starter is. Just first game of the season against Arkansas, someone's going to jog out there, and they're going to be the quarterback that gets a chance to do that. But my question would be, and that's good on the tweet there, but my question would be, is the Arkansas situation similar to what's going on here at Georgia? Because part of the reason why people kind of roll their eyes at the Sam Pittman line, even though it's kind of funny comparing himself to Kirby Smart, is the assumption of the media, the assumption of Arkansas fans, the assumption of all of that is that everyone knows the quarterback's Felipe Franks. You can announce it, you can not announce it, but barring injury, everyone knows that Felipe Franks is going to be the starting quarterback at Georgia. Well, how different is the situation here at or I should say, Franks, the starter for Arkansas, against Georgia? How different, though, is the situation at Georgia, where Jamie Newman was long time presumed to be the starting quarterback, but now there's the presence of JT Daniels, the USC transfer. Assuming he's healthy, how involved is he, and how possible would it be that he has a chance to emerge as the Georgia starter there at the position? Todd Monken talked about both these guys a little bit when he met with the reporters on Monday. I do want to make sure I share with you what the new Georgia offensive coordinator had to say about the evaluation that he's been able to make about these guys thus far. Here's Monken.
Well, I really like our guys. We've got a good number of players at that position, starting from, a couple of transfers, as we all know about, and then some young players that are on our roster. So it's been fun to be in the room, because they all very, I don't want to say they're different in terms of their personalities, but they all want to be really, really good players, and they really want to work at it. There's never an issue in terms of them understanding what you're trying to get accomplished offensively. So, obviously the difficulty of not having spring ball and going through some of those practices, there's only so many things you can do in meetings without actually getting out there, and things they can do on their own. So right now it's an open competition. We're looking at all of the players, because they all have talent. And so we're excited about getting to scrimmage this Saturday and seeing where we're at.
In another comment in that same press conference, Monken said that he thought that maybe Newman was a little bit better of a thrower than he'd been given credit for. Maybe JT Daniels was slightly more athletic than he'd been given credit for. Something else that Monken also said in that same press conference, which I think is relevant in all this, is he was asked, what's the most important aspect of being a quarterback? And he talked about accuracy. Now, when you look at Jamie Newman a year ago, the guy that has been presumed to be the starter, it seems like on the basis of Pro Football Focus and some of the numbers like that, that Newman was quite accurate on very deep throws, but maybe not as accurate as you would like for him to have been on some of the shorter, more intermediate throws. This is also something that Mike Griffith has referenced with some quotes from former Georgia quarterback Aaron Murray, saying that's an area in which that you might want to see some improvement for a Jamie Newman. So just how solidified is Newman's spot as the quarterback at the top of this depth chart, and how much is he being chased by guys like JT Daniels, DeJuan Mathis? We may get a little bit of a hint from that from Kirby Smart after the first scrimmage on Saturday, but ultimately, a little bit like what Sam Pittman would say about his team at Arkansas, it may be first game of the season before we actually really know for sure. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We'll have more from Todd Monken before we're done on today's program, but there's also been a lot of recruiting talk over the course of the last few days there as well, and as I've been saying, it finally feels like there's some fun momentum maybe for Georgia's 2021 class, which is a welcome change. So for more on all of this, let's go on the road, assisted by AAA, with Dog Nation's recruiting insider, Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We'll say hello to Jeff Sintel here as we go on the road, assisted by AAA. A lot to cover over the course of the next few minutes. We'll try to see if we can cram a bunch of stuff in here. Jeff, I know you know where I want to begin. You wrote the story for DogNation.com coming off this past weekend. Gigantic collection of elite prospects for the class of 2021 on their own dime, of their own volition. Player-led get-together around the Athens community, some of this involving the great outdoors, some of this probably involving, you know, the classic city in town. Georgia coaches not able to be a part of this. But when you hear names like Corey Foreman, who we've seen, you know, photographic evidence of, Mason Smith, Terry and Arnold, who we'll talk more about in greater detail later on, Xavier and Sori, Amarius Mims, to go along with commits like Brock Vandegrift and Lavoisier Carroll, when you see a lot of this playing out in that way, it's hard for a Georgia fan not to have a lot of fun with that discussion. What did you make? Let's just start big picture and we'll kind of, you know, drill down on some more aspects of this. But what did you make of what went on with the Georgia targets, the Georgia commit this past weekend?
Well, good morning, everybody. Brandon, it's funny. I don't know if I've told you this story yet, but like somebody from our forum asked me, I don't know, maybe a couple of months ago, maybe like 45 days ago, they asked me if I could get you to recreate your, your Dumbledore, Hogwarts, Harry Potter magic by speaking a 2021 recruit into existence.
Yeah.
So we did, and like one of our viewers, member of our community, was like, he's like 30 episodes behind, but he just got to the one where you spoke the name of Corey Foreman into existence, and then like. There, at least one fellow on the Dog Nation forum is convinced that you have magical powers, Brandon, when it comes to this, because you pulled a pickings on Foreman. And, you know, in the sense of seeking out another chuckle for you here, my man, wouldn't it be funny if a year from now, I don't know, because let's look at this thing, the genesis of it, and I can hear your voice in the background, excuse me, I can hear your Ed Orgeron impersonation in the background. No coaches were involved in this, in the planning of this. But it dials back to a wedding that got Mason Smith, I believe my information is correct here, he got Mason Smith into Atlanta. And then it was like on, because Foreman wanted to be around town at the same time as Smith. Those two are really huge together. I mean, package deals are what they are, but this package deal started getting gift wrapping last summer at the opening when those two balled out as those rare juniors. And then all of a sudden, Brock Vandegrift and Lavoisier Carroll got involved, and then Terry and Arnold, and then Xavier Story. And all of a sudden, you know, Amarius Mims wanted to go fishing again. And all of a sudden, this became something rather significant. And for, you know, a guy like me that watches this, tracks it, writes about it, it's funny how, you know, Georgia has this thing every – I think Georgia seemingly has an event every summer where it was the West End reveal, and that was $64 million, I believe. And then it was the slip and slide and the cookout and the water guns and everything like that the year prior. And now this year, it's a wedding. It's a guy from California. It's a guy from Louisiana. They all get together. They show up in a truck bed. I mean, can you imagine what the name, image, and likeness people – I'm giving out free ideas here, Brandon, but can you imagine – if you get all those boys together in a truck for blank blank.
Oh, sure.
Truck dealership or whatever, and they're all wearing Georgia gear like a year later after that. Can you imagine how popular that would go over with Dog Nation if every one of those faces, except for maybe one or two or three, because there's some little brothers in the picture there as well, show up as Georgia Bulldogs. And you got to say this, man. You got to say this. That could only help Georgia tremendously by getting all those dudes together, having fun. There was a fishing hole. There were some little brothers involved. It was everybody hanging out. I guess I'll give you a slight break in my thought train here to say, coaches didn't plan any of this. Coaches didn't plan any of this. It was all player-led. It was all commitment-led, really, and recruit-led. I mean, not even the current guys on the team were involved in this. And,
no doubt.
You know, I think a lot of these young men were starving for their recruiting experience that they've lifted all these weights for all their lives. I think they were starving and waiting for something big like that to start. And then we could all trace it back to a wedding, an out-of-town wedding visit that kind of, I'm going to say it sounds cheesy, but aligned all these stars together in Athens Town.
Yeah, so it was, I'm assuming you mean, because we showed this, you know, at the beginning of the week, Mason Smith was in Atlanta. That was the wedding that Smith was here for a wedding. Is that kind of the, I guess, the first domino that fell on all of this?
Yeah. And then you knew that, you know, Corey Foreman wanted to go to, now, first of all, Brandon, let me just, I'll go ahead and authorize some gray hairs on your head right now. There's going to likely be another unofficial visit with Mason Smith and Corey Foreman to LSU.
Sure.
There'll probably be multiple visits here, but Mason Smith had never been to Georgia, and this was his first Georgia experience. And like I was saying, with all this stuff that people write checks for and they stroke checks for and that Georgia builds, you know, next year will be the 80-whatever gajillion Georgia football complex that will be replacing some of the footprint there at Butts Mir, where there's a lot of construction already well underway. But all of it was really designed to get all these dudes together, have them laugh, have them cut up, have them cut jokes, have them see, you know, them. I'd imagine that first meeting between Corey Foreman and Marius Spence was like, you know, that's the dude I want to try and chisel up every day in practice so I can get better every day. Mason Smith and Corey Foreman are just really hard workers, and they need a guy like that. I mean, Brennan, it would just be dangerous. With this Jalen Carter film dropping from practice the other day and a revised millennial kind of board drill, if you see all this, man, and you start thinking about the tantalizing thought of Jalen Carter, Trevon Walker, sophomore, junior, and then you get Corey Foreman and Mason Smith is true freshman on the Georgia defensive line. Brennan, you're going to have to find a new hot button to talk about in terms of defensive line worries.
Well,
even 80% of that was to happen.
Yeah, I want to get to that point in a moment, but there's something that you said a moment ago that I can't quite get my mind off of. You know, we may be about to enter the era of name, image, and likeness for these players. And when you mentioned there was the one pickup truck photo where a lot of them were standing there, you can't help but think that no names here, but a blue oval or a gold bow tie or a silver horned animal, you know, to sort of have a brand accompaniment to go along with that photo. That's a pretty good advertising opportunity for one of the pickup truck makers here in America, and for these players themselves, a good chance for them to maybe cash in on that. I would not mind seeing some of those young men get a chance to endorse one of those pickup trucks that they were standing on there. I think that's a really pretty good point.
Oh, well, you know, Brandon, I don't think it would be the heartbeat of America in this one. You know those commercials with somebody rolling around four wheels from up in Michigan with that blue oval? That's the signature brand of the Georgia football, the truck company, anyway, of the Georgia football program. You see Coach Smart rolling around in
sure.
that thing, bringing up Bainbridge and everything else. And I mean, that's just, isn't that a sign that football season is here when you start seeing that? That Ford that blue oval commercial for the head coach rolling around Athens, and they've got some generic practice player inside that thing. Well, here's the new name, image, and likeness thing. You could put a player in that thing now.
Yeah,
going forward,
I don't think that's a bad idea at all. But in all seriousness, you know, one of the reasons why I make such a big deal about Mason Smith, why I made such a big deal about Corey Foreman, here's what I believe: that if you want to be a great defense in the SEC at the very highest level of college football, you have to have a great pass rush, and you have to have a great defensive line. if you're only okay around your front seven, if you're only good, then you can't be great defensively. You can look good against bad competition, against mediocre offenses, but you'll be a paper tiger when you take on the very best offenses in college football. And so, as you said before, there has been a very impressive pipeline of defensive linemen as of late, and guys that I think have the potential to eventually be very good pass rushers at Georgia. We obviously talked about Jalen Carter at the top of this program. That's an example of that from the most recent recruiting cycle. Trayvon Walker has the look of a superstar. That was a guy from the cycle before. That's Georgia recruiting elite defensive linemen. Keeping that going with a guy like Smith, with a pass rusher like Corey Foreman, that's just a prerequisite. If you want to be a great defense, the kind of defense that can also slow down great offenses, then guys like Smith, guys like Foreman are guys you have to have there. It's one of the reasons why we've made such a big deal about them over the last few days when it comes to what went on here.
You know, and I'm going to authorize, I guess I'm going to say this. You know, Brandon, with the disappointing, the gut-punching news this week, I think your greed is good mantra, one of your taglines of your show, that, and it just shows you just got to have guys. I mean, really, Georgia's guys this year are Devontae Wyatt, still Julian Rockfister, I guess, a little bit, but then Jordan Davis the most for that interior of the defensive line. Is one of the Tennessee three, is that Zion Loeb going to come on? I think that guy will come on and move into some playing time reps along the front as well. But those guys are the ones that have to be there in 2020. But then you got layers of it. You've got dudes coming up behind them. And that would be, you know, Trevon Walker and Jalen Carter. And then if you can keep adding and keep stacking where they're, that's just the biggest difference between previous Georgia and Smart's Georgia is that you've got guys that, when an injury happens and you have to go next man up, it's a sense of excitement. It's a sense of been hearing great things about this young man in practice. He's going to get his chance. Let's see what he can do now. And it's almost like, you know, Brandon, it feels like an old school 80s, 90s wrestling match when somebody gets tagged in and they come into the squared circle and they're firing haymakers left and right. There's a sense of energy when that guy hits the field because he's about, from what we've been hearing, to do something pretty good.
So I want to pick up the pace here a little bit. We're on the road, assisted by AAA with Jeff Sintel. My family, we've been AAA members for a long time. We love the value this brings to us. Peace of mind really is one of the great things about that. My wife is on the road without me. She's with the kids. They break down. That roadside assistance makes me feel good about them when they can't be with me. But it's not the only value that our friends at AAA can provide. You can also switch your auto insurance and save on average of $529. It's great savings. You can find out more about this. Switch and save today by going to this website, AAA.com/auto insurance. That's AAA.com/auto insurance. Tomorrow, Jeff, four-star defensive lineman from the state of Alabama, city of Birmingham, Tim Keenan, is ready to make his college announcement. I guess I'm trying to figure out the online chatter on this. It seems like a lot of folks think that he may stay at home, play at Alabama, but it sounds like to me that Georgia's still involved in this and maybe has a chance to win this one. If you're a UGA fan, how much should you be paying attention to what Keenan decides to do tomorrow? Is this worth someone's time here on a Saturday?
Well, he's actually three-star. That's one of the things you kind of forget. I think he lost the star over the last 6 to 8 months. He's a good scheme fit for Georgia. That's the main thing. He's about 6'1". He's about 320, 330. One of those zero-tech pluggers. If we're bringing up names, John Atkins, Jordan Davis, that's exactly the fit there. Georgia has a need in this class. It doesn't have to be a five-star because there's very few of those, but a definite need for a zero-tech. Mason Smith's not one of those. Tyrion Ingram Dawkins is not one of those. And there's some Georgia-Alabama back and forth that everyone is keen on right now with Keenan. You know, it was a situation where it always seemed like it was Georgia or Bama. I remember seeing Keenan on the sidelines of a couple games recently, as recently as last season. He was there for the Notre Dame game. He's a guy, big presence, big kind of like fire hydrant plugger that's going to make Georgia's running back that seemingly look like running backs that are at linebacker come downhill, fill gaps. But it's really Alabama, Georgia. It was Georgia for a minute, then it's Alabama again. What this means in my mind's eye is that Alabama came in late and said he still had a spot in class. They tried to match the recruiting intensity that was coming his way from Georgia and Alabama. Now I think Keenan's got to make this decision where does he want to stay home? I think he visited Alabama about 40 times prior to the quarantine. or does he want to just branch out? And you know, he has a strong connection with Trey Scott and Scott Cochran. Thing about Keenan that's very interesting that I'm always thinking about. I remember him telling me that. I mean, maybe this was like pre-COVID, definitely, but he always said that, man, if they're going to give me an extension, like taxes, if I can get an extension to wait and sign, I'm going to take as long as I can to wait and sign. I'm going to get as much information. I'm going to watch coaches move. That was always very big for him. And now he's just felt like in August he wanted to move everything up, secure his spot. But Keenan is a guy, you got to remember, this would be a non-binding verbal commitment as well. So I think whatever happens on Saturday, Georgia, I think he would probably likely stay Georgia. But if it's Alabama, you gotta watch the rest of the cycle for Alabama. An offensive tackle here, a linebacker here, a cornerback here. They might not have room at the very end for a guy like Keenan in their class, and that would always bear watching.
Because he's 340 pounds, I think that's what he's listed at right now, this is a player I'd like to see Georgia get. Now, at the expense of whatever the other recruit, I'm not, you know, capable of processing 25 thoughts at one time, but, you know, this space-eating, nose-tackle-type player, I do think is an important characteristic for recruiting classes. Pretty clearly, when Georgia has gone the three-star route at that spot before, it's worked out pretty well to the tune of Jordan Davis. So, you know, I guess there's a part of me that would say as a fan that if Georgia could win this recruiting battle, I would treat it as pretty good news.
Yeah, I keep coming back to scheme fit. Jordan Davis is not long for the red and black. This looks like a farewell lap tour for Jordan Davis, considering how well he's kept his weight in check and the development of him just being now a junior, taking on freshmen, sophomores, and other juniors across the trenches in the SEC rather than being the up-and-coming freshman or sophomore player who's finally in great shape. I think it's really important now, especially not getting the most encouraging news out of some of the 2019 signees that were across the defensive front. I think Georgia really needs to restock this position. It's going to be continually restock at a championship level. And I think Tim Keenan, especially when you consider the scheme fit and how that would help Georgia, I think he still would be a very nice part of the 2021 class if he winds up signing with Georgia.
We're on the road with Jeff Sintel, assisted by AAA. Let me move on here. Terry and Arnold, four-star safety, is going to announce his finalists today. By the time many of the folks listen to the show, watch the show, they may have already seen that from Terry and Arnold. Seems almost a given that Georgia will be among this final group. Where do you think things stand with Arnold's recruitment at the moment?
Well, first of all, you're going to love this, Brandon. It's definitely not a final group. I think this is an initial top eight, top 10.
Oh, is it that many? I thought, is he going double digits on us today? I was hoping it might be a little smaller than that.
So his normal timeline, he sketched this out for me very well. His normal timeline is he thought he would be down in pre-COVID. He would be down to he would initially drop the top 12, top 13 in spring. He would have gotten it down to a top five by start of his senior season, and then he would make his decision sometime during the season. He's backed up, man, as you might imagine, by about 6 months. This would be his first original initial cut, and I would think 7 to 12 might be where Terry and Arnold's decision might be. I think he would probably try to drop it down again one more time. He's always told me, very recently, he's told me that he thinks he's still going to be a February signing day guy because he wants to take time. He wants to check his visits. We hear this a lot from Florida prospects in the past, but this is why folks should really pay attention to Terry and Arnold, because I think he could play a corner and he could be so effective at cornerback, teams would leave him alone, and then he would be talented enough to move to free safety where he could impact the whole field, kind of like in an Ed Reed type manner. He's physical. He's got, you know, go-go gadget arms. He's got bunnies in his legs for vertical and leaping ability. He's even got those faux basketball offers, Brandon, to be a point guard for three or four SEC teams that he would come in on his football scholarship and then play basketball during the offseason. He's that talented of an SEC basketball prospect as well. But here's the thing you want to listen in really close on. I've been doing this for more than a minute. I can go through the Richard LeCount recruiting. I can go through the D'Angelo Gibbs recruiting, Jalen Kimber, Keely Ringo, Tyson Campbell, Tyreek Stevenson, all of those elite, upper-tier, All-American DBs Georgia's ever recruited. Now, maybe some of this has to do with COVID recruiting, but I've never heard Kirby Smart say these the things that he said to Terry and Arnold, which is A, I think you can win the Jim Thorpe Award in college football, and B, I think you have the type of talent where you could be in New York at the Downtown Athletic Club for the Heisman Trophy finalist ceremony. Kind of like Charles Woodson in the past, that's the type of imagery that Georgia is sharing. He talks to Kirby once, twice a week. This is a very strong relationship, almost every day talking to Kirby via text or something else like that. Terry and Arnold is one of those players. I know his ratings aren't aligned yet. He's the number two safety right now on 24/7 Sports. But for me and the 2021 Georgia class, seeing all those corners flock to the NFL, very likely migration after the 2020 season, Terry and Arnold is number two on our Dog Nation top targets list because he can do all those things. And he's gotten that type of feedback from Georgia coaches.
So I want to do two really quick things on this, because we got a lot of ground I want to try to cover here. It's funny that you would say, or it's actually kind of amazing you would say, he could potentially be a cornerback at Georgia, because I'm sitting there watching his game film while you're talking. Jeff, he is laying lumber in this video, and I apologize for our radio podcast audience. They don't get a chance to see that, but he's de-cleating people in this highlight video. This is a very physical player. If he would potentially bring that level of physicality possibly to the cornerback spot, that is a really special player because, you know, you see some offensive and defensive highlights from him. His defensive highlights are incredibly, incredibly physical, really bringing back, you know, some of the Lewisine stuff that we saw before he came to Georgia, just some of that willingness to engage in contact. Terry and Arnold's bringing that in a big way.
Yeah, so the thing that, you know, I remember talking to him about what do you think are what he thought his most impactful plays on his tape were. On his tape word, I'll make this very, very, very short, is he said that time that a running back came through the middle and tried to plow me and I dropped him on the back of his head. That's a guy that, you know, those Therrion sounds a little bit like Deion now.
Yeah.
Therrion's from Tallahassee. But Therrion is going to bring the shoulder and get behind his pads and be very physical. I thought it was very interesting. We got some coverage up yesterday about David Daniel. Kind of the fire and ice type. Those two boys know each other. They've been very chummy. They're chummy on Twitter. They got to know each other on Cam Newton's 7-on-7 team. There's a relationship there. But Daniel is the physical in the box enforcer thumper with great length. And it's kind of like a fire and ice complement with Terry and Arnold, who can make a play on any ball, has speed, the ball skills, the vertical ability, but also can bring that lumber as well.
All right, very, very quick here, because we've talked a lot about Mason Smith and Corey Foreman and their relationship with each other, but isn't it true that Terry and Arnold's connection to another prospect that was in town this past weekend and a big name on Georgia's list, the linebacker Xavien Sorey, Arnold and Sorey, am I correct in saying this, are friends too in a very similar fashion to the way that Smith and Foreman are friends with each other. Is that correct?
Yeah, Brennan, it's almost like a bunch of Legos here in this 2021 class where It's Lavoisier Carroll is now tight with Xavien Sorey because those guys are at IMG together. And then Terry and Arnold and Xavien Sorey are tight because, A, they're from the same, nearly almost the same part of Florida where they feel like they grew up in similar backgrounds. They have the same values. They're looking for the same things. They really see a kinship together where you hear it all the time. Man, it'd be great if we play together, but if the best thing for each of us is to go in a separate way, then that's perfect. We want everybody to find their best fit. But those two, you see the edits. Georgia's put edits together. Florida's put edits together. Those two really want to, at least right now, hold on to that ideal of playing together as much as possible. And you got a little bit more of an anchor there for Georgia with Lavoisier Carroll and David Daniel as well. So they know other guys in the class at the same time.
Okay, so I've got some other things I need to talk to you about. Dejon Nugget Warren, I thought, was a really nice pickup for Georgia's class of 2021. You've written some great stuff on Warren. People need to read that for themselves. The interview with Brock Bowers from Before the Hedges presented by Kroger this past Wednesday was terrific. I need to talk to you about both those things, but can we do something else to close this out that I'm almost 100% sure that you don't expect me to ask you about today, but I am admittedly kind of fascinated by? Do you think that Georgia is going to be heavily involved in the recruitment for Arch Manning for the class of 2023? There's been some chatter coming out of Louisiana that Georgia is one of the teams that's kind of in the mix there. It's obviously very, very early. I'm assuming that he'll probably go to either Ole Miss or LSU. This is going to be a massive deal once people start paying more attention to the 2023 class. Manning, the son of Cooper Manning, the brother of Eli and Peyton, is number five, I think, player in the entire country, according to 24/7 Sports. He's also an incredibly famous last name. A year from now, how much do you think you and I are talking about a guy like Arch Manning? Does it ever get that serious with Georgia and what is going to be a mainstream famous recruit by the time people start paying attention to 2023?
I think it's going to be different, Brandon, because this isn't going to be an old school recruitment. I don't know if it was a recruiting analyst out of Rivals.com or Archie, the grandpa Manning himself, who had the great quote about Arch Manning, is where he said, he thinks like his uncle, but plays like his grandpa.
Okay.
And everybody remembers Archie Manning was kind of like the original Johnny Manziel, a little bit of Southeastern Conference football, really mobile, really ran the ball a lot. When I mean old school, it's not just because he's named after his grandpa, but I don't think this thing is going to be conducted over Twitter and multiple interviews and flashy edits and top sevens and top 12s. I think this is going to be one that kind of conducted and transacted by one of the household names of college football. And I think the Mannings are going to do their recruiting here for Arch a lot differently than maybe some of their elite 11 quarterback type peers always have. I think Duke and Tennessee also probably need to be involved in that. But Kirby Smart's relationships with Peyton have certainly helped. And Georgia gave out a very early offer as well. I tell you, Brandon, you always want to focus on the future on Fridays with recruiting coverage. And you even bypassed the 2021 labyrinth, the 2022 labyrinth with, you know, Gunnar Stockton to South Carolina, MJ Morris,
sure,
Braden Davis, who else could be there?
We also talked about that topic for like 10. We talked about that topic for like 10 minutes last week, too. So I felt like we had covered our 2022 bases a week ago.
But the 2023 quarterback situation with Manning, I just think, you know, LSU, all that stuff, I think this one is going to be conducted a lot differently. I think Arch Manning, his freshman year, didn't even grant or allow interviews during his freshman year. That's how they wanted to just concentrate on football, focus on football, focus on getting better. And I wouldn't be surprised if he'll have a lot of limited media availability and media exposure going forward for the next two years.
Yeah, thanks.
3 years.
Thanks for indulging me on that. I realize that's not a very relevant topic today, but I am kind of fascinated by this, and I think eventually it's going to be a massive, massive story in college football, and I'm curious to see how much George is a part of that, because it seems like he may be the real deal for the class of 2023. Jeff, incredible stuff from you here on the road, assisted by AAA. Sure enough, people really should check out the video with Brock Bowers. That is a likable young man, and I think he's going to be a big part of the Georgia offense in kind of a new fangled fashion that this offense has kind of morphed into. And of course, the great stuff with Jean Nugget Warren, some of the quotes that he gave Jeff about wanting to play with swag and kind of following the footsteps of DJ Daniel, kind of a similar recruiting story. It's just good stuff, and it's all available, Dog Nation video channels, dognation.com. So, Jeff, I'll encourage folks to check that out. Thank you so much for being here on our program today, On the Road, assisted by AAA. By the way, don't forget, folks, new time for Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, 8 p.m. now on Wednesdays. Jeff, hope you have a great weekend.
Brandon, I'm going to leave you with one nugget. Arch Manning or not, Georgia will have no problem being the number one class in 2023.
I like to hear that, and that's a good way to close things out.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, it's back to feeling fun again, right? I mean, I would say that I was never worried necessarily about, you know, the status of the 2021 class for Georgia. I did think legitimately Georgia lost some battles that I thought they might win. I think one of the things that we do sometimes is we have a tendency to sort of redefine everything in recruiting as a win, no matter how it played out. It is possible to take L's in recruiting. I think that Georgia probably did a couple times along the way here, and yet there are still plenty of wins to be gathered, and the seeds being planted for it might eventually grow into some of those big victories. You see some of that taking place right now, and Jeff has done a very good job chronicling all of that. So check him out, dognation.com. Forum.dognation.com. Please make sure you're paying very, very close attention to all of that. With that said, let's get ready to transition to our SEC through here. I thought it was really funny to see Dan Mullen, you know, asked about, you know, some of the predictions that have been out there. You know, Florida moving up, best team in the SEC East, called a playoff team by Urban Meyer. There's been a lot of praise for Florida as of late, and Dan Mullen was asked about that, and Mullen did, as a lot of coaches do, kind of try to sidestep, you know, some of that and say, we've got the potential to be very, very good, but obviously keeping in it just the potential for that right now. I've been very clear on my feeling about Dan Mullen. I think a lot of times, you know, trends happen below the surface and they're not really noticed until it's way too late. For instance, you're watching Wall Street News, things like that. By the time CNBC or Bloomberg TV is talking about it, the people that are actually in position to make money on it have already done that and they've moved on to something else. I think college football is, you know, very much the same way here, that this is a big year for Dan Mullen. This is the kind of year where he does have to pay off on all the chatter that's been out there the last couple of years. And if he doesn't, it's going to turn for him really, really quickly. Do not be surprised. I don't think that there's anything that Mullen can do this year that gets him fired at the end of the season. I don't think that. But I want you to listen to what I say now, and you can come back and we'll revisit this a year from now. I don't get every prediction right. I get some. My job is to be as clear as I possibly can and hopefully interesting when possible. Here's my prediction on Dan Mullen. Next summer, when some hot list, who's sitting on the hot seat, when some of that kind of stuff starts coming out, the kinds of lists that Will Muschamp was heavily populating this year, you will see Dan Mullen on some of those lists next year. He's not on the hot seat right now. I think there's very little he could do to get fired at the end of the season at Florida. It seems like it's coming completely out of nowhere. But when you have experience at quarterback, if your quarterback isn't of the top of the SEC variety, when you have been praised as the premier college, play caller in college football, and you know people, including Reese Davis, have said that about him. If it doesn't work out that way, all of a sudden people start asking, "Well, wait a second, you're supposed to be a great play caller. You had experience at quarterback. You had these, you know, big transfers running back from Miami. Where is all the pizzazz here? Where's the razzle-dazzle that's supposed to exist?" As I've said a million times, if Georgia, which as Florida fans would say, were forced to go grab a transfer quarterback, forced to go, you know, get a fired offensive coordinator, this from the perspective of Florida fans who would downplay the acquisition of Monken and downplay the arrival of Jamie Newman, JT Daniels, if Georgia can use those things to build an offense this year better than what Dan Mullen has at Florida, then what hope do Florida fans ever have to do anything of any real substance under Dan Mullen? I predict that by next year, because I don't think that Florida's going to have the success this year that Gators fans hope to have and media folks have predicted they'll have. And if they don't, then I don't think the narrative of Mullen as a great, brilliant play caller, quarterback whisperer, I don't think that can survive this year if you don't see evidence of that on the field. Hear me now, file that away for later, we'll see where it goes. There have been reports coming out of Auburn, AL.com, Philip Marshall, longtime Auburn reporter, that multiple Auburn practices have been canceled this week. Two of them canceled this week because of some coronavirus situations there. So we talked the other day about LSU quarantining a number of offensive linemen, only having four offensive linemen available for practice. Auburn, the situation significant enough that according to reports, they've missed two practices this week because of that. So, you know, I guess my thought here on this is, as someone who has been very clear about his agenda, I want to see football played this fall in a healthy and safe way. And I've congratulated the way in which SEC folks have used their expertise, their intelligence to try to craft a healthy and safe way to play football. As someone who has felt good about the direction we're moving in, you know, these little hiccups here and there at a place like LSU or a place like Auburn, a reminder that we, and I mean collectively all of us who care about college football, are not out of the woods on this kind of stuff as of yet. We still have to hope for some good news here and there, some of this involving some of the other conferences too, probably, by the way, that you just got to navigate a few pitfalls here and there on that, and that's what Auburn's doing right now. What LSU has done this week, and so that's probably worth paying attention to. Let me squeeze in one more thing here as a part of our SEC through. Very interesting to hear Auburn linebacker Owen Popo tell reporters this week that he feels like the Auburn offense is going to be completely different this upcoming year. Eli Stove, a wide receiver, saying that he feels like the Tigers are going to throw the ball more this year than they have before. Listen, there's always a lot of happy talk, you know, before seasons begin of coordinators and their impact and this and the other. Sometimes it actually does work out that way. I have always felt that Chad Morris was a pretty good hire for Auburn. In fact, I think I probably thought Morris was a better hire for Auburn than a lot of Auburn fans thought that it was. I thought this was one of the big names that was available, and Auburn got him. But it was a matter of, does Auburn choose to use him? Gus Malzahn has had a little bit of a tug-of-war wrestling match with his various offensive coordinators about how much responsibility he was willing to give to them. This is a story worth watching. Auburn is one of the tougher outs in the SEC. They're not going to have to win their division. They are not good enough to win this league. They are good enough to keep someone else from doing it, whether it's a foe in the SEC West or, frankly, a team like Georgia. that has to play them second game of the season. Auburn is good enough that they're worth your attention. You just heard me downplay Florida a ton. This is where the media, I think, gets it way wrong. There's too much talk about Florida, not enough talk about Auburn. If Chad Morris is allowed to make an impact on that offense, things could get very, very interesting in terms of definitely, this is true for Georgia, for Alabama, anybody that plays them, definitely having to pay a little bit more attention to Auburn than the offseason conversation would have led you to believe, and we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, of course, we remind you that Kroger is famous for being fresh for everyone. With that in mind, we'll do our Kroger Fresh take here for a moment. And obviously the big news yesterday was the knee injury for Georgia wide receiver Dominic Blaylock. After injuring that in the SEC championship game to close out last season, the start of practice leads to another injury for Blaylock. It's devastating news. Blaylock's a massive fan favorite. On our show, we're no different on that. I really enjoyed having Terrence Edwards, the former Georgia wide receiver, on the program yesterday to talk about what he thinks that Blaylock means to Georgia and how he thinks Blaylock will eventually have a full recovery. And I think that's great to know. And we'll look forward to seeing Blaylock doing big things in a Georgia uniform at some point in time in the seasons to come. But for now, the games themselves must continue and Georgia must step up in Blaylock's absence. I was going to play this audio for you yesterday on the show when we had a little bit of a technical glitch. When Todd Monken met with reporters on Monday, this is obviously prior to the Blaylock injury, he did talk about what the current status of the wide receiver situation is, how he is viewing these guys getting acclimated to his offense. Let me let you hear a little bit of Todd Monken on that topic.
A group of talented guys that really been a joy to work with. I mean, they're excited about the opportunities they have in front of them with a couple guys leaving last year, but we're still relatively young with certain guys that we're counting on with George and some of the incoming freshmen and some of the older guys that still have, you know, have work to do as developmental players that need the reps. You know, guys like, you know, Matt Landers, D-Rob. I know he's one of our older players, but again, from a developmental standpoint, Tommy Bush and some of our older guys that I think will push for playing time. Kyrus Jackson has been a relative surprise in terms of his consistency and the way he's played and developed. So, and again, that's what we're paid to do, is we're paid to recruit really talented players and then develop them and maximize their measurable skill set. That's what coaching is, and utilizing what they do bring to the table.
I love almost all of that from Monken there. There's a word that he uses. He says the absence of a Lawrence Cager off last year's team and other receivers you might mention is an opportunity for other guys to step up. Well, if that opportunity existed before, it exists doubly now. And that's really the job of these wide receivers, to step into that void and create an opportunity for themselves they otherwise might not have gotten had Blaylock, you know, not gotten hurt and taken those reps and taken those targets and taken that. This is a chance for us to see more now from Kyrus Jackson. I think that Kyrus Jackson could step up in a really big way, or freshman like maybe a Jermaine Burton that also could be playing in a similar position on the field where Dominic Blaylock was. This is a chance for him to step up there as well. You know, we love Blaylock. We'll look forward to seeing him play again, but the season this year, the responsibility now shifts to someone else. A veteran player like a Kyrus Jackson or a Tommy Bush, that Matt Landers that you heard Monken mention, or one of these very interesting freshmen. It's all on the line for these guys now. Georgia needs someone else to step up. These receivers will be ready to do it. And by the way, the coaching staff, putting them in a position to succeed, is also really important there as well. It's our Kroger Fresh Take here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. And we're excited to announce the Kroger at Embry Hills is reopened and reimagined here. Wonderful amenities like a Starbucks, a fuel center, a whole lot more. You can visit your newest Atlanta Kroger today right there at the Kroger at Embry Hills. And here on the way out the door, let me also say a couple things to you as far as our Gator Hater Updater goes. Around here, we believe a good Georgia fan is a Gator Hater. I had this pointed out to me yesterday by one of our viewers that was commenting on our show after it was over, that today Gator Hater is at 1,399 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. Tomorrow is a Saturday. We won't be here. We have a tendency to really like round numbers. Many of you do there as well. So in honor of that, can we show the Saturday number as well? Now, don't get this twisted. This is not the number of days right now. This is how many days it'll be tomorrow. Beautiful round number of 1,400 on Saturday. So if you're scoring at home, 1,399 today for the Gator Hater Updater, and a beautiful 1,400 tomorrow since Florida's beaten Georgia. And on a day which Georgia will be holding its first scrimmage, that seems pretty apropos. You'll have a great weekend. I'll see you back here on Monday. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.